get this key. I've never actually stayed in an Airbnb.
I know we were talking about it before.
I never have.
My jaw dropped a little bit.
In fact, the people may get a kick out of this, but I tried it one time, and the guy refused to let me stay at his place.
Probably searched
your profile. He's like, Ascot. Oh, yeah, this is fake.
Yeah, this can't be this guy. Is this guy from the 1920s? Yeah. What kind of profile picture is this?
This is episode 259 of Bourbon Pursuit. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny, and here's what's happening in the bourbon world. It's now the two-year anniversary of the trade war with the European Union, where a 25% tariff was slapped and went into effect on all exports of bourbon, Tennessee whiskey, and rye whiskeys. And the result? It's not good. U.S. distilleries have lost out on $340 million in sales, and exports have declined by one-third. The European Union is the biggest overseas market for U.S. spirits, which accounted for more than half of all American whiskey exports last year. Airlines including EasyJet and KLM in Europe, with Delta and American Airlines in the United States, and Asia's Virgin Australia are suspending all or part of their alcoholic drink service in response to COVID-19. For domestic flights in the U.S., they're pretty much suspended, but they are going to be available for long-haul and international flights. It's part of a widespread revision of the industry's food and drink service to minimize interaction between the crew and passengers to ensure a safer journey for all. Now, on the bright side of news, visitor centers are beginning to open up once again. Wild Turkey will be opening up on June 25th, and during this time, they say that they'll be offering a new Turkey Takes Flight tour and tasting experience. This is going to include a multimedia brand immersion followed by a guided tasting of bourbons and ryes. There are now a limited number of days and hours available for tours, and tours can be booked online through the Wild Turkey website at wildturkeybourbon.com. In the same light, Buffalo Trace and Barton 1792 will also be reopening, but on July 1st. Guests will be required to register for a tour or event in advance of their visit in order for the distillery to efficiently manage the tour and group sizes with respect to social distancing. Buffalo Trace will be reopening with a newly expanded visitor center, which triples the size of the original visitor center. And registrations for the Trace Tour, Old Taylor Tour, Bourbon Barrel Tour, and Expansion Tour can be made at tours.buffalotracedistillery.com, and Barton Tours can be reserved at 1792distillery.com. On to some bourbon release news. Old Forester will be releasing the 20th edition of its limited birthday bourbon on September 2nd in celebration of its founder, George Garvin Brown's birthday. This marks the 150th year that the company began in 1870, and the 2020 birthday bourbon will be bottled at 98 proof. It's made up of 95 barrels, all aged 10 years, and offered at a suggested retail price of $129.99. Woodford Reserve has also released a new limited edition whiskey that has been aged in 5 different styles of barrels and is rightly named Woodford 5-Wood. Woodford Reserve 5-Wood began as a standard bourbon aged in a standard oak barrel. Then that same liquid was finished in 4 other barrels: Oloroso Sherry, Amontillado Sherry, Ruby Port, and Tawny Port barrels. It is available at the Woodford Reserve Distillery along with other Kentucky Select retailers, with a suggested retail price of $49.99 for a 375ml bottle. Evan Williams Bourbon has announced the veterans that have been selected as the 2020 American Made Heroes. The 2020 American Hero Edition label features bold red and white stripes, framing a blue background featuring subtle star imagery, and the name American Hero Edition in bold red font right on the face. Each Evan Williams American Made Hero is prominently featured on the side of the label, with their picture, name, their military title, and their distinguished story. Each veteran will receive a $5,000 donation to the charity of their choice. In Bourbon Pursuit news, we concluded 3 barrel selections this week: a Larceny barrel, 2 Elijah Craig barrels, and a Barrel Craft Spirits Private Release Series 18-year-old Kentucky whiskey finished in different barrels. We are currently projected to do over 20 barrel selections for our Patreon community this year, in addition to all the first access of all of our Pursuit series releases. So if you're even thinking about it, Don't wait any longer. Get more information about our Private Barrel Club and how you can help support this podcast over at patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. Now, wouldn't it be nice if someone was able to give you the best tips for planning out your bourbon trail experience? Well, look no further. In this podcast, we cover distilleries, experiences, and some restaurants that you cannot miss. It's impossible to get to every distillery in a short amount of time, but this episode, it will give you a little bit of scoop on how to navigate the areas of Kentucky so you can make the most out of your trip. Have you ever wanted to get barrel bourbon shipped right to your door? Well, now you can. You can get access to their award-winning products right now online. Go to barrelbourbon.com and click the Buy Now button. With that, enjoy today's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. Truth time. I spend way too much money on bourbon. So do you, probably. And it's because the prices have increased. So when I see something that's under $40 and something that I know is going to be good, I just get so excited. And so imagine my excitement when this whiskey came through my email. Oh, it didn't come through my email, but the press release came through my email. Old Tub returns, bottled in bond. Now, Old Tub is a brand that's been in the Beam family for 140 years, and Booker No was pretty famous for sipping on it on the, you know, with barbecues and so forth. It's a big part of the No family, especially. But Old Tub has been in the gift shop at kind of a lower proof. It's been a kind of a bit of a secret, and now it's coming out nationally as a limited edition bottled and bond. But get this, hold whatever it is you hold. Sit down if you're standing. It's only $22.99. When I saw that, I pinched myself. I'm like, this can't be right. No way that they're doing a limited edition bottled and bond for $22.99. I know it's going to be good because most of that whiskey coming out of Beam at 100 proof is usually really solid. Knob Creek, for example. But my gosh, how exciting is that, that there's a limited edition bourbon coming to the market and we can afford it. Of course, the downside to that is a bunch of people will buy it and then put it on the secondary. But hey, I'm talking about happy times. This is, I want to bring happy and joy to your life right now. $22.99. God, I hope it doesn't suck. But $22.99, even if it does suck, it's not going to hit the bank account too badly. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, tonight I'm talking about some whiskeys that definitely do not suck. I am revealing my Whiskey of the Year contenders from this quarter, the second quarter it ends this week. So come on over to YouTube tonight and check it out. Just search for my name in YouTube, Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers.
Welcome back to the episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Fred and Ryan here, not in our usual recording studio. We are somewhere new tonight, which very awesome. It's an awesome little house we're in here. Not even little house. It's a pretty massive
Ryan's
house.
Ryan's not here, though.
He's really missing out on this one.
Yeah, and it's a shame because like he's such an entrepreneur. You know, this is a story of building something from nothing, quite literally. And I wish he was here.
I know. Well, you know, we'll have plenty of good lively discussion without him. And, you know, really the focus and the topic of today is to really talk about the ultimate bourbon trail experience. Like, where should you stay? Where should you eat? What places can you go? If you're going to start planning this, like, how do you figure out, like, what area of the city do you hit? Can you hit them all in the same exact time? And, you know, we've got our guest today. He's an Airbnb super host. So that means that he's had, and I'll let him do, you know, kind of this introduction we were kind of talking about before, but he hosts tons and tons of bourbon groups in here. And he kind of really found a niche market in here. So people ask him all the time of, you know, where should we go and where should we tour and all that sort of stuff. So I think we're gonna probably be enlightened a little bit ourselves.
And I think what's important to note here that this guest, Eric, is not somebody who is just looking for your dollar. No, he's someone who's actually passionate about this. He's a member of the community. He supports people on Patreon who are in the community, he supports bourbon enthusiasts, he supports us. In fact, we walk in and what's he do? He's like, hey, you wanna try this this little bit of smoke wagon here?
Yeah, this is the infamous bourbon enthusiast barrel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly, I didn't think I was ever going to get to taste this, so I was very excited.
It is a treat. You know, it's amazing that I always find it amazing. There's a ton of like NGP chasers out there, mm-hmm. and now Smoke Wagon's just blowing up all over the place. Yeah. So, you know, hats off to them that they kind of had some foresight to buy a lot of good age product at the same exact time.
And too. I always go back to packaging. That is a cool bottle.
Like it's very unique.
Yeah.
I mean, cool it's got some like some vines and everything. And it's like in the glass. So that's not a cheap investment in the glass right there. No,
when the whiskey matches the bottle, win-win.
There you go.
So this is the first thing he offered me when I walked in. And so, you know,
it's going to be a good day.
You know, I like our guests right now. He gave me some good whiskey.
So let's go ahead and introduce him. So today on the show, we have Eric Carrico. Eric is a bourbon Airbnb super host. So Eric, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Kenny. I appreciate you having me on the show, and I appreciate the kind words. I wanted you to know that that bottle's called Karma, so maybe this is all just karma that we're all here.
Right on.
There you go.
But yeah, it's been a good bottle so far, and you know, I appreciate everybody in the Patreon community, and I enjoy hosting people for Airbnbs.
And I guess that's kind of where I want to start too, is like, how did you get involved with figuring out like Airbnbs? And then how did that pivot to the point where you said like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot of people that are here for bourbon?
Well, you know, back in 2013, we were in transition between a few homes and our two homes, and we had put a lot of work and money into both of them. And so we started hosting guests coming in, and then we realized that about half of them were here for Airbnb, or were booking through Airbnb or here for short-term rentals to go visit bourbon distilleries and bourbon places. So, you know, interacting with them, developing relationships, we just kind of kicked it off as, you know, hey, maybe we should look more into this. And so I think to date we've hosted about 4,000 guests.
Oh, wow. 4,000?
Yes.
That's quite the number.
Yeah. 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 So probably between 1,000 and 2,000 of them, we're just, you know, here for bourbon trail experiences. And it ties into a lot of, if you look at Louisville in general, I think they said that the economic impact of bourbon within Kentucky is about $4 billion.
Yeah. And I think that's probably, we don't even think of like we think of hotels, we think of stuff like that, but I mean, like, not to that amount of scale. Usually when we get stuff that's coming from the KDA, it's like, hey, we had this many visitors, it, you know, it did this at this many distilleries, but we don't actually see a lot of the impact that it's happening, you know, economically around the city with restaurants and hotels and everything like that too sometimes.
So I'm pretty fortunate. I'm on the mayor's committee about...
Of course you are.
I'm on this committee of like, it's basically Bourbonism 2.0. And, you know, I've seen what bourbon has done, you know, through Bourbon and Beyond. And like when there's something here that's bourbon related, the hotels sell out. And that's tax dollars too that comes to us. So I am a longtime fan of hotels, and we were talking earlier, you were a Marriott guy, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You love those Marriott points.
Yeah.
So talk to me about like the actual like the differences between like Airbnb and hotels, because hey, get this, I've never actually stayed in an Airbnb.
I know we were talking about it before.
And I never have.
My jaw dropped a little bit.
In fact, the people may get a kick out of this, but I tried it one time, and the guy refused to let me stay at his place.
Probably
searched your profile. He's like, Ascot, oh, yeah, this is fake.
Yeah, this can't be this guy. Hey, is this guy from the 1920s? Yeah. What kind of profile picture is this?
So I was in the construction industry, and, you know, I was on the road probably 80% of the time, and pretty soon hotel rooms all become the same. And so when you come from that background and then all of a sudden you're like, if you're in the same place every time and you're like, I hate these sheets. I wish they had real sheets. I wish they had like a real pillow. I wish they had like a real bed. You guys saw the bed earlier.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're very comfortable beds. So like pretty much everything that I hated about a hotel, I'm like, if I could take this and then, you know, have people come and visit and create relationships with them, it'll sell itself. And it kind of just evolved into that thing that it's just, allows you to be more comfortable. It creates a better product. And if you do it the right way, it just kind of evolves into something that you can continue to move on to if you want to, or just keep it at whatever level you want.
Do you keep the same bar of soap?
No, definitely
at least,
not.
At least we take care of that.
There's a lot more involved to it, but it's just providing an alternative experience for travelers. And in the bourbon industry, I've found, you know, hosting like, you know, different barrel clubs and stuff, there's real, a lot of people, you know each other over the internet or whatever, but whenever you have a space where everybody can interact and as well as sleep and stay together, and it just creates a much better experience, especially whenever you throw some bourbon in the mix.
Oh, absolutely. And before we kind of frame the discussion here, before we get into it, you know, when you talk about the barrel clubs, what we're standing in or what we're sitting here right now is like one of the most perfect opportune places, because and we always talk about this too, you know, we talk about the guys from Bourbon Community Roundtable, we get together, we call each other internet friends, right? And it's usually at one of our houses, but our houses aren't usually have like nice big spaces like this. And so when you can fit, I mean, gosh, what do you think the most people that you fit in here from a bourbon club, just like people hanging out and gathering and stuff like that?
Oh, you could easily do 40.
See, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. And you can't even see it on camera, but if you were here, like there's a whole second floor with a whole nother sitting area. It's truly immaculate. So we'll talk about it a little bit later, but how you can get in contact with Eric to book it.
And the artwork in here is immaculate. You've got, if you're a fan of birds or like nature and horse racing, there's all these vintage paintings and drawings. There's gorgeous like porcelain. There's decanters here. The wood floors is partially originally from the house. The beams here. This is just a beautiful, restored, saved old home. Or actually, it used to be a bookstore. I used to come in here and buy books. And take us through the process of kind of what you did here. Because I know we have a lot of like geeks who like to redo their basements, or they like to, you know, fix up their bars. And I bet you there's a tip or two you might have for them, because you're an engineer, a smart guy.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I try. But basically, like you said, it was an old bookstore. It was built, I think, around 1900s, 1915, around then. And we tried to restore as much as we could. But, you know, there's a lot of things that, to bring it up to where it would be a building like today.
Electrical wiring?
Yeah. This, to put you in perspective, this house actually had gas pipes ran through the whole house, because that was the lighting system, the original lighting system. There wasn't even electric. It was like basically natural gas.
Sounds dangerous nowadays.
There was a lot of work involved in it, but it basically, he had decided to move on from owning the bookstore. He retired. And so we just felt it was a great opportunity here on Bardstown Road, where you can be around all the great restaurants. And, you know, I'm not trying to build like a 50 story hotel. I just want something that feels authentic, that you can walk to, go to the restaurants, have a drink at the bar, and be back in 5 minutes. So it's a great opportunity that we just thought it would be a great location. So.
Yeah. I mean, you are in the thick of it here. That's for sure. Yeah, great location.
It really is.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's start framing really what the topic of everything today. So I'm going to kind of take this idea and maybe like what we, like when we say we go to Vegas, we're like, okay, like 3 days in Vegas, that's the perfect amount, right? 5 days is maybe too many, 2 days, maybe not enough. Now, if you're going to the Bourbon Trail and people are coming in from out of town, what do you all really think is like the prime number? What should people really be looking at? You know, is it like a 2 day, a 3 day? Is 4 days too much? Like when you're coming on the Bourbon Trail, what's a good number that people should be targeting?
I think the question is like, how good is your liver? And what kind of company are you around?
That's all excellent points. When it comes to family, what is it like 3 days? Family and fish, after 3 days, it gets a little smelly. So, my experience has been, if you're a corporate person, it's a tack on to something that you're coming for a convention. And so like 2 or 3 days, and they want to try to maximize, you know, they're always in search of the best bottles. Or if it's corporate related, it's not necessarily like a bourbon taste, but if you're coming here for your own experience, it really is tailored to what you enjoy as bourbon. And then maybe if you have like a list of distilleries you want to go to, and then you just divide it up into pods, and the pods are based on geographical location. And that's kind of how I explain it to people. Like if you're really set on Maker's Mark, cause you've been drinking Maker's Mark your whole life, well then obviously we're going to go that way. But there's other people who are like, well, we want to, you know, go to Disney World. So they go to another, you know, distillery Buffalo Trace or something like that. So it really kind of evolves on the taste of the group that you're with. And so that's kind of when people book, I kind of ask them, hey, are you interested in what you really enjoy, or are you just interested in entertaining your guests?
Yeah. I think there's one thing that a lot of people may not take into consideration when they do come, and they're coming on the Bourbon Trail and they're like, oh, let's go down there for a weekend. And you say, oh, that sounds like a good idea in theory. But when you do that, you know, if you're actually wanting to go to a distillery and do a bunch of tours, you're going to find out that there's really not a whole lot of stuff happening on the weekends at a lot of these distilleries, yeah. Right? So maybe I'm thinking like, maybe like Thursday's a good day to start doing your tours, or maybe Friday, something like that. Maybe you do like a Friday, at, you know, outside the city, and then Saturday in the city and have a nice dinner on Saturday night or something like that. I mean, is that something that y'all ever thought about, if people coming in from out of town, if they're going to miss something because they're trying to be weekend warriors here?
Yeah, that's a good point, you know?
Well, you're completely right on that, that it's, I mean, a lot of the distilleries before certain ones, you know, decided to do tours, it was a production facility. It's a plant. It's yeah. like there to produce. And if you're not there in the hours it's producing, they're like, well, okay, just move on.
Here's a fermentation tank that's empty. Here's something else that's not running. It's very quiet here this yeah. afternoon.
Yeah, it's actually funny. Like Ed Foote was the former master distiller for Old Fitzgerald or Stitzel Weller, and he would tell these stories. He's like, people would show up and want to like look around. We're like, what the hell do you want? You know, and that's like not that long ago. It was like 1990, so 1991. So that yeah. was, you could see the little bit kind of booming there. I've actually got a suggestion for this whole thing. My philosophy is the weekend is really for the smaller distilleries. The smaller distilleries, which, you know, they don't really leave. And they're really ingrained into that. And so when you get them on a weekend, they're going to give you everything they've got, you know? Yeah. And if you say you're like a big bourbon fan, you listen to this podcast, you hang out with the Airbnb superstar, you know, maybe you might get to go in the back and taste a little bit of that whiskey in the barrel.
It's potential. You know, the other thing is that, you know, bourbon is booming so much that, you know, a lot of operations are actually starting to go 7 days a week now. There's a handful that when you go to some of these distilleries on a weekend that they're just not going to, something's not going to be running and something's not going to be happening because everybody's kind of, I mean, it's full steam ahead right now.
I kind of feel though that on the weekends at the majors, you know, you get in the B team sometimes, like, you know, the master distillers are not going to be there.
No, I mean, most people, it's a 40-hour work week for them. And so, yeah, they're not going to be there.
And I don't mean the B team is like as bad. It's just like, those are not people that are there during the week, and they're like part-timers or something.
And maybe they're running at like 50%, yeah. right? And maybe it's just like, all right, maybe on Friday, we'll fill the fermentation tanks, and then we'll come back and check them on Monday, right? Because you don't really need to do anything for a few days with a fermentation tank.
So Kenny, Eric brought something up that I thought was very interesting, and I'd actually not heard a lot of people refer to it this way when they're planning their trips. So let's say someone on the listener side is trying to plan their trips. You brought up the pods, the geographical pods that you kind of like, you know, put everything in a box. Take us through like what's the perfect avenue for you to hit all the pods? How would you do that?
Oh gosh, can you even hit all the pods? Do you want to hit all the pods?
I just want to hear him talk about pods.
Basically, you know, you have Barstown, your favorite places, and so there's a lot of people. I found a lot of people from New York are really fans of Maker's Mark, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, I think Maker's is the gateway bourbon for a lot of people, right? Everybody right. finds that iconic red dripping wax, and it's usually one of the first bottles they get. It's usually one of the people that they get it, and they feel like it's their first high end bottle of bourbon, and they yeah. try it, and that's kind of really starts the addiction for most of us. I know it started with me, that's for sure.
You know what's yeah. cool about Maker's is they're really the main bourbon that brought bourbon back because they would, you know, you would go into a restaurant. And you would like, I want a premium American whiskey, and it was Maker's Mark, and that was it, you know?
For sure, yeah.
So
it really kind of evolves around, you know, they'll look at that and they'll say, okay, so then, you know, you go to Barstown and you hit all the places down there. And then there's like a lot of the people that are doing barrel picks. And so they already kind of have an idea where they want to go. Actually, they probably know better than I. But then they want a recommendation on like the best restaurant to go to. So, you know, I'm like, if you're going to Woodford, maybe you stop in Midway and there's a really good restaurant there that you can, you know, get a great pour for like, you know, half the price of what you would be paying in where you're coming from. And then there's the people from California who think it's like freaking wine country. And they're like, what? You don't just sit there and drink bourbon the whole time? I'm like, no. Like, if you did, you would not be walking out of there very well. It's basically just the different areas where they produce, and we kind of, you know, tailor to whatever they ask for.
How do you fit in, like, the ones that are further away, like MB Rowland in Western Kentucky and New Riff in Northern Kentucky? Do you make those, like, their own day?
Yeah, we've had people that will do, like, they'll be coming from Ohio, so maybe they'll hit New Riff on the way down, and then they, you know, come to where we are. And then we're like, all right, go hit the Urban Bourbon downtown. And that's always, like, the resource. So you come and you can stay in Louisville. If you're flying, a lot of people stay in Louisville. So, like, the first day they get here in Louisville to do the Urban Bourbon stuff downtown, and then they go to different pods and they come back and fly out. Or if they're traveling, the great thing about Louisville, which is totally underrated, is that you can hit the entire Eastern Seaboard within a day's drive. So you can factor either way. You can be like, all right, I want to, you know, hit these places on the way there, or, you know, when you get here, you know, fly out and do whatever. So it's a really flexible space. It's really flexible to the clientele that we have. And, you know, that's the reason why we just kind of noticed that, wow, this is just like a booming industry.
And I guess that kind of brings up another question. We'd probably push people to say, I think Louisville's probably the best place that you could stay. Now, you've got places you can stay in Bardstown, you've got Lexington, you've got Northern Kentucky. If you want to go out to Owensboro, I guess you can go out to Owensboro and stuff like that too.
What is that supposed to mean?
It's just so far away. It's just so far
they
away.
They got good barbecue and music.
They do. And they're growing. You've got bourbon societies out there happening and like that. And there's a Paducah Bourbon Society. There's all kinds of things that are growing out that way. You know, when I... like I said, I feel that Louisville has a lot going on in regards of the growth, the scene of bourbon, restaurants, and everything like that that's going on. You know, Lexington is definitely trying to make a stake in the ground too. I know there's a lot of things that are happening in regards of trying to push more of the you know, economics into Bardstown, you know, trying to build more hotels, trying to do things like that.
Yeah.
But I think the hardest thing about Bardstown is actually finding the workforce, right? Because a lot of people in the workforce that are in the distilleries are actually driving from Louisville or Lexington every single day to make that happen, or Frankfurt.
Do you guys want to know an interesting fact?
Let's hear an interesting fact. I like interesting facts.
The population of Frankfurt is 33,000 people. The number of visitors to Buffalo Trace was 293,000.
It's a lot.
How do you support that with places to stay for all those 293,000 people? So my point is, though, when you're flying, a lot of the people that we get that are professionals or whatever, you know, they're going to be flying in. So they're going to have to, you know, deal with flights, rental cars, and all that other stuff. So a lot of the times when we have hosting people that are professionals, this is like where they're going to stay. They just have to do it because of the flights and everything else. If you're an enthusiast, though, yes, all of those places can be tremendously wonderful. And I've looked at a lot of those places as, you know, potential areas where we could expand and things like that. So I'm very interested to figure out the economics on it. And I haven't yet, but they all seem to be very good.
I think you'll figure it out one of these days.
I think it depends on how you like to explore a place. When my wife and I, before we had kids, we used to like to stay in nice little cities like Savannah.
I love Savannah, Georgia.
But we'd want to be on the outskirts a little bit. We wouldn't want to be in Savannah property. So I think if your comfort level is urban and access, you have to be in Louisville. But I think Northern Kentucky is a great place to stay as well.
Well, they agree 100%.
They are growing. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
What's the thing that they have going on now? It's like their Northern Kentucky bourbon.
The Beeline.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there's an airport there too that you can fly into and be in Northern Kentucky. You know, there's just so much growth going on. It's just tremendous.
This is how I make my decisions where I stay. Places to eat and the chances of an all-night place being open for whatever reason.
Like a buffet? What are you looking for?
You know, I need an IHOP. Maybe I want a Waffle House. I don't know. But the fact is, if it's 3 a.m, by God, I want something.
So let's go ahead and let's kind of hit these pods real quick, because I'm saying, okay, I'm from Louisville, or I'm starting in Louisville, because we'll say it because we're kind of biased towards that. So we start in Louisville. And you typically, when we do these things, you got to make a choice, right? You got to make a choice. Do you go to Frankfurt?
Do you go to Bardstown? Do you do Louisville? What else am I missing?
Northern Kentucky.
Northern Kentucky. Yeah.
Maybe, I guess you would throw Maysville into that Northern Kentucky.
Yeah. So let's take Bardstown. Let's take the Bardstown pot, right? So, if you're in Louisville, you're a solid 45 minutes, to some of the first distilleries over there. So you drive up 65, you take the Bardstown exit, and then the first thing you're going to see is Jim Beam on the left-hand side. You're going to see the smokestacks and everything like that. A little bit down the road, you got Four Roses, but you know, what are some other things that, you know, because you got to drive down a little bit further into Bardstown. That's considered Clermont still at this point. And so you got to go maybe another 30 minutes past that to actually start getting to the bigger, it's more of the big boys over there.
Yeah. I mean, you can exactly what you're talking about. You start at Jim Beam and then, you know, you go to Bardstown Bourbon Company as well as Willett. And there's about, 7 places you can go to there. That's all within a 15-minute radius. So you're looking at a 45-minute drive plus a 15-minute drive once you're there to hit each one. And so it would be hard to hit them all at the same, you know, in one day. But, you know, you could take off 3 to 4 of those once you're there.
And the other thing to think about is, like, if you're going to Bardstown, you've got to be kind of extra picky about where you're going to be visiting and what you're going to go to, because you do. You've got Heaven Hill, you've got Willett, you've got Barton, you've got Bardstown Bourbon Company, you've got
Four Roses Bottling. Yeah.
The bottling line is there. I'm trying to think of.
Say Willett.
I said Willett already. I'm
Barton, 1792.
Yep, got that one already.
Bardstown Bourbon Company, Preservation.
Ezra Brooks.
Luxco.
Luxco's around there now. And you've got Preservation Distillery, as you just said, as well. So, like I said, you've got a lot that are in the Bardstown area that you've got to, be kind of picky about where you're going. Now, I think for me,
don't forget Oscar Getz.
The Whiskey Museum. See, there's a lot of other things that you're not even, that we have to think about as you're doing this. Like I said, I would say limit yourself to 3, maybe 4 at the most if you're going to start going into this. And you know, the other thing is that when people go to Bardstown, you know, I want to kind of focus on Four Roses a little bit. You know, you have the bottling line over there. However, I wouldn't say that you should probably put that towards the top of your list if you've got a short, you know, runway of things that you really want to go hit. Like, if you want to really do Four Roses the right way,
other pod.
I think you got to go and you got to say that for the Lawrenceburg and Frankfurt trip.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found, that if you hit Frankfurt early in the morning, you can do Buffalo Trace, then you can hit Wild Turkey, you can hit Four Roses, all within, you know, that's like a three tour pod kind of thing.
Yeah. That's a stellar day right there to hit all those. And then you've also got, Woodford that's around there as well. And the one thing I really like about, Woodford is it is pristine Kentucky. You go through its rolling fields of horse farms when you go into it. And to be fair, like for us, like I just love being able to take guests through there and just kind of like have their eyes kind of open up to really see how beautiful Kentucky can be.
For sure.
You know, versus some of the other places where, yeah, it's just a factory, right?
But I get the same thing at Wild Turkey, you know, where they have the overlook of the ravine. And then if you follow that around, you can follow that around to get back to a Buffalo Trace if you want to go the opposite way. That's a beautiful drive to get back to Frankfurt that way.
How many dead bodies do you think are between Wild Turkey and Buffalo Trace? Because you know, back in the day, there were some robberies there.
Yeah, it was a windy road for a reason. I mean,
you know, and while we're also going down this path, there's also kind of like the bourbon mecca for nerds, right? And that's Castle and Key, right? And I always try to tell people that you should probably, if you're listening to podcasts, odds are you're really into bourbon. And so you should probably just take it to the next level and go and check it out, because you're literally walking through history at that point. You know, you hear about it, you talk about it, but now you get to finally see it.
Here's the other thing is like, it's not just whiskey history. Across the street from Castle and Key is buried a Revolutionary War hero, and they maintain his grave and take care of it. So to me, that little strip is a beautiful piece of American history. You got the stream right there. You can see it. You can see the castle. You walk through there. You can see the old bricks. And if you're lucky, you get to go in that big, long warehouse and just touch the barrels and just imagine what used to be. You know, it is such a stunning piece. It's like going back in time.
It sure is. I've walked through the doors, I've seen everything. And I remember, I'm sure you saw it too, when it was still in ruins, when, you know, Marianne was there and we got to
actually kind of, before that, I snuck in there.
I'm sure you did.
I snuck in there and I got a bunch of photos before anyone bought it. And it, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes being in that place. And, yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of like papers. I was in the still room and the wall had collapsed. I mean, it was actually kind of dangerous to be in there, because it was like, it might collapse, but bricks are everywhere. And all these old distilling papers were just kind of laid out. And I was just like looking for yeast recipes and all this stuff. It was just
like that yeast strain.
it was nothing. You would have found it exciting because it was like engineering stuff. Yeah. Like, put that bolt here. Yeah. You know, I was like, no whiskey geek stuff.
So there's also like two things when you go the Frankfurt Lawrenceburg route. They're almost like Easter eggs.
What do you get if you mix Seattle craft, Texas heritage, and Scottish know-how? That's Two Bar Spirits. Two Bar Spirits traces its roots to a ranch in rural Texas run by the founder, Nathan Kaiser's family, for six generations. Nathan grew up on the ranch with stories of relatives bootlegging moonshine. And after moving into Seattle, he wanted to keep the family tradition alive, and he opened Two Bar Spirits in 2012. They're a very traditional distillery, making everything from scratch, and each day starts by milling 1,000 pounds of grain. Their entire product lineup consists of only two whiskeys, their moonshine and the only bourbon made in Seattle. Both bottles are being featured in Rackhouse Whiskey Club's next box. Rackhouse Whiskey Club is a Whiskey of the Month club, and they're on a mission to uncover the best flavors and stories that craft distilleries across the U.S. have to offer. Rackhouse ships out two of the featured distillery's finest bottles, along with some cool merchandise in a box delivered to your door every 2 months. Go to RackhouseWhiskeyClub.com to check it out and try some Two Bar for yourself. Use code PURSUIT for $25 off your first box.
So there's also like two things when you go the Frankfurt Lawrenceburg route. They're almost like Easter eggs. And that's the people that you can meet. So if you're booking your tour with Buffalo Trace, and by the way, when you do come to the Bourbon Trail, we should also mention that you need to book the stuff online and you need to book in advance, because things do sell out, especially when you go to Buffalo Trace with hard hat tours. I mean, they're done months and months in advance.
So there's something, this is a total like geek thing, but the Bourbon Trail is technically a trademark of the Kentucky Distillers Association.
It's true.
Which Buffalo Trace is not a member of, but they all been, when we talk, we're not talking specifically about the registered trademark of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. We're just talking in general bourbon tours.
Air quote trail. And so the other thing, like I said, the Easter eggs, and that's if you get to go on a tour at Buffalo Trace and you might be graced with the presence of Freddie Johnson, right? So you might get that little Easter egg. The other one is if you go to Wild Turkey, you might get the other Easter egg of going to the gift shop and actually seeing Jimmy Russell down there. It happens from time to time where he's just hanging out, signing bottles.
I worked in Harrodsburg and I would stop by there probably once a week just to say hi to him, because meeting that guy is like meeting a legend. And if you have access to that, you got to take advantage of it every time you drive by that place.
And, you know, I was about to just add on to that. And if you go to Four Roses, you can meet Al Young, but then, you know, Al passed away, but it just kind of like hit me that you get to meet real iconic figures that we will be talking about in whiskey lore, you know, 50 years from now. So the two people we just talked about, Freddie and Jimmy, both Bourbon Hall of Famers, you get them on your tour if you're lucky enough,
you just happen to be there right day, right time kind of thing.
And if they're there and you're there, they'll shake your hand, you know, talk with you.
Oh, he'll talk for hours.
So we've hit like two of the hotspots, right? You know, one thing I also did forget to mention, you know, that I've actually been super pleased with in regards of the growth of Bardstown, when we talked about that pod over there, is the dining experience that you're starting to get in that area, with, as we had mentioned, Bardstown Bourbon Company with their restaurant coming online. You've got Mammy's is always a staple that when you go for a barrel picked as well. So
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell as well. That's for sure. But as I mentioned, I wanted to make sure that they got a shout out because always been super impressed with the dining experience that we've had there at Bar Sound Bourbon Companies too.
Yeah. Great food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so now we've kind of hit to the, like I said, the Frankfurt, Lawrenceburg area. I don't know if we're missing any other distilleries over there in that kind of area. But, you know, if you venture off a little bit further.
Three Boys, right?
But there's
some smaller ones.
There's some smaller ones down there now. But again, some of these might not be on the radar for some people. So you got to go and do your homework. That's for sure. Like I said, we're trying to help you give kind of like the...
Would you consider Paris? Like Paris is like kind of like it's Lexington, Frankfurtish. The former used to be Gentleman.
Hartfield.
I actually really like that for people to go to because... While we see the depth and size of something like Wild Turkey, I think it's important to always see the little guy, and Hartfield's a good one.
Yeah, and speaking of seeing the little guy, it almost makes me remind me of, you know, if we venture off a little bit different here. So, and maybe you all can correct me here. So, at what point does Makers fit into all of this? Like, what pod does Makers fit into to your trails here, Eric?
I would say...
Is it like on its own? Because it kind of is.
That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get lost.
Well, that's true. Be careful with Google Maps and Apple Maps. Because
yeah, just follow the signs.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like the Disney World for some people. And so they kind of make a day just out of doing that. And the grounds are so meticulous and so nice. And they've really done the Makers tasting experience with the, you know, the 46 and the barrels select and all that stuff. I mean, I think they were probably the original... people that kind of converted from being a production facility into a distillery tour.
Oh yeah, that's a fact. That was all done by design. Marjorie Samuels, when they were kind of like recreating that place.
Yeah.
They were like, we want to have tours here. We want to make this a destination. That was all by design, and they've actually kept it for the most part the same as the original distillery. Yeah. Weird thing. I'm going out of...
Here we go.
I'm jumping out of the...
We're off the rails.
We're going way off the rails. Okay, so Woodford, Maker's Mark, Buffalo Trace. The zombie apocalypse comes. Which place do you have a better chance of surviving?
The grounds are gated or they're kind of like,
I don't know. I just, well, just,
so bourbon becomes a commodity at that point.
Yeah. So like you're basically
money's worth nothing.
Yes.
I thought you're meaning like for survival. Like I'm actually, I feel like I've got to figure out like who has the highest rick house that these zombies can't climb. Like, did I take it too literally?
No, you took it exactly how I intended.
Okay. Yeah.
Which one do you have the best shot of surviving?
I would say probably if we want to go kind of like little more isolated, probably Maker's Mark, right? Because when you look at what happens in some of the zombie movies themselves, like they take over the cities, right? That's the first that happens. And then they start venturing out. But, you know, you kind of have, you know, you're out in the country, you have a little bit better of an opportunity out there. So Maker's Mark is a little bit more isolated, a little bit more field. So you have maybe a little more running room in front of you.
That's a good point.
I would go with, the great thing is, they're all located next to water, so that's a good start right there. Mm-hmm. You got good drinking water. but I kind of like the whole Buffalo Trace because, like, if you look at the history of Buffalo Trace, it was built on, a Buffalo crossing, and you have the big hill that overlooks everything where they put in these $2 billion worth of barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty good stockpile. I don't know. It's a tough call, but... they're all good locations, I think.
And you can always just jump on the river.
Exactly.
You could. Just float on down.
Just float on down.
What about you? Where'd you run off to?
Well, you guys both bring up really good points. Woodford, to me, has the ability of like, you can go out into the middle of nowhere because there are portions of it that are nowhere. And I know where all the springs are on that location. So
you got the blueprint somewhere.
I've got a little bit better head start of finding the good water. And some of the springs are like really, really hidden. And the stone warehouses, I feel like give me a pretty, pretty good shot And basically, I'm just going into the warehouse. I'm not going. I'm just going to go drink in the warehouse. So, I mean, that's basically
it. Makes it easy. All right. Well, I'm going to bring a conversation back on the rails here because.
But you did notice we talked about the distill. We described the distilleries in our pursuit of hiding from zombies.
Well, only because there was something that kind of jogged my memory of something that you said earlier, saying like, well, you know, when you go and you see all these big locations and you see how all these big companies that do it, you kind of lose the hindsight of like, what does everybody else do? And this kind of reminds me of my own personal experience of actually going out to Makers one day. And then out of just nowhere, I was with my buddy and we stopped at Limestone. And this was when Limestone Ranch, they were only selling their White Dog. They didn't actually have whiskey at the time. I don't think they had Yellowstone 107 at the time. And, you know, we go there and literally, Stephen Beam, like just taking White Dog off a still, like into a bucket and like putting it somewhere else. And so it was just like one of those things where you see the scale of what it looks like to see something that pumps out, you know, 1,000 barrels a day versus somebody that's just trying to do like 7 barrels a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a crazy scaling to get to be that is just an enormous mountain to climb. And I've been to Limestone a couple of times and I think that's where the Bourbon Chase ends right now, or it did. It ended in Lexington. We didn't really talk about Lexington that much, right?
Well, we were going to get to it, but okay. I think you said Bourbon Chase. So make sure that our listeners are aware. What is the Bourbon Chase?
Well, the Bourbon Chase is basically a race that starts in, it starts at Jim Beam and you go through all, I think the entire Bourbon Trail and ends in Lexington. And it's a race where there's ultra marathoners that'll run, you know, entire legs, but we divide it up into, I think 12 people legs and it's a 24-hour, maybe 36-hour race. And so you start at Jim Beam and then you go to each one and each person runs a different leg and you use different transportation for each person to go to each leg. And so at the end, it's basically like a big bourbon party.
Yeah. Sounds miserable. I think on average,
each runner probably runs between 18 and 24 miles.
Yeah. I know a lot of people love it and they have their runner's high and they get a kick out of it. That's just not me.
And let's also talk about the damn waiver you got to sign. Call out some of the things that are in the waiver.
So when you sign the waiver, apparently you can be attacked by a lot of things. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, when you see nothing but green eyes, that waiver basically covers them from being any kind of liability.
I mean, we have coyotes in Kentucky that are like up to your mid chest right now. And so
I'd be carrying flares with me.
I don't know if you've noticed that I'm not necessarily built for running, but nothing is more deflating than when you're running at 2 o'clock in the morning, like. And all of a sudden, one of those ultra marathoners pass you going about 10 miles an hour. And you realize you got about 35 minutes to go.
Oh, man.
So
that's when I just start walking.
Yeah. Swift kick of the butt
It's a great time, though, because you get exposed to all the distilleries. And basically, you know, the vans and things like that, it brings people in from all over the world. There were people there that I talked to from Puerto Rico. There were people that I talked to coming from... as several other countries, and they decorate their vans. One guy had a pot still on the top of his van that was like basically spitting out smoke and everything. And so you meet all kinds of characters, and it's just a great experience for people that really love bourbon and to run.
There you go. It's like derby hats, but for running.
Yeah, it is. So.
So you had mentioned Lexington. So if you are wanting to venture off a little bit further down the road from Frankfort into Lexington, there are a few different places down there. We've interviewed a few of them on the show before. So kind of give us a rundown of what you're going to be seeing in Lexington if you're venture over that way.
Well, I went to the University of Louisville, so...
Well, I went to the University of Kentucky, so... We're
all right. I don't spend a lot of time in Lexington.
It's a good thing we're on opposite sides of the table.
I'm neutral. I went to Oklahoma State.
There you go.
So you got Alltech that's over there, right? Yeah. And so Alltech is doing... They're brewing. They're also doing distilling. What's their main brand? Why am I... Town Branch. Town Branch.
Jamesy Pepper.
Yep. Jamesy Pepper's now... They're coming online. I think they've got some distillate that's a few
Bluegrass Distillers. Big fan of theirs. I like what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, there's a lot of things that are happening in Lexington right now.
Barrel House.
Boy, they're putting that on.
So, if you are staying in Lexington, those are some good places to hit. So you can do that, and then you can venture a little bit further off and do Frankfort and maybe a day in Bardstown, right? So that's your Lexington Avenue. Now, I also want to, like I said, I think we've kind of like chopped this up a little bit to make you all understand that when you're doing this, like, don't try to hit multiple cities in a day. Like, try to stay in your pod, because it's very, very hard to sit there and try to hit, you know, from Frankfurt to Bardstown back to Louisville. Like, it's just impossible. Like, you're going to miss a distillery instead of.
And hopefully you have a driver, you know, you got one of the fine services of, you know, they'll take you around. Or you have a designated driver, because you don't want to risk that.
Absolutely. You don't want to risk it, but definitely be safe and be a good consumer at the end of the day too. Now, the biggest one that we didn't talk about is, if you are staying in Louisville, there's Louisville now. Louisville's starting to have a big resurgence in regards of what you can go, what you can visit, what you can see. You know, some of the two biggest ones that kind of come to mind right now are, of course, going to be Old Forester downtown, as well as Michter's. Those two coming online have really starting to shine. And then you've also got Peerless down the street. You've got Angel's Envy. You've got the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience. So each one of these is having something new and unique and able to offer that, if you don't want to go out and visit everywhere else, you can do it right here in the city.
You got Beam. You got the little Beam spot there, 4th Street Live. And can't forget, you got Stitzel Weller. And if you got a special tour, you can do something at Bernheim with Evan Hill. I mean, Louisville, you really can just come to Louisville and experience, you know, the distillation and kind of like the urban aspect of it. Oh, Rabbit Hole, too.
Can't
forget Rabbit Hole. But the thing is that from a pure operation standpoint, it is so different. And so, like, if you were someone who's wanting to really get into the understanding of whiskey, I think you owe it to yourself to see how they make whiskey in an urban environment and then go out in the country and see how they make whiskey.
Exactly.
It's so different.
100% right there. You're so on point with that. Because if you're coming to, you know, just hit as many as you can hit 12 in Louisville. And then if you're coming because you're an enthusiast and you want to see how it's done, you see the countryside and you... At certain times of the year, not in February, but, you know, it's such a beautiful countryside that you're just like, wow. And then you think about all the history that it comes from Kentucky with Daniel Boone and, like, you know, the water. And then you just, like, become immersed into it. It just becomes almost like its own story that you can't really repeat to people until you experience it.
You know, one that you just kind of reminded me of, like, a good analogy here. Like, I guess maybe coming to Louisville is like a children's, like, diorama, right? You're trying to make, like, a small scene of what something bigger looks like. So you kind of get a taste for it here in Louisville, but you don't get to experience the full thing.
Yeah.
And so that's where you get the opportunity to start venturing out a little bit, hitting a bigger distillery, seeing how things are done on a much, much larger scale too. But I mean, Louisville's got a lot going on. You've got restaurants, you've got bars, you got a lot of good things. And even these distilleries, a lot of them are starting to come online now with their own restaurants, as well as a lot of good cocktail bars that are starting to have in their own areas too. So
yeah, I dare say that both Old Forester and Michter's are making some of the best cocktails that you can get in Louisville at the moment. I mean, they really do have up their bar programs or mixology. In Rabbit Hole, you know, they'll have like fun exclusive events. You know, it's funny, like, you can actually, this is the other side. This is kind of like the dirty side of whiskey, the marketing. You can actually see how each one of them are trying to stand out and be different, but yet they all kind of work together. It's just fascinating to me from a business perspective of like the tourism side. And this is, are we done with the pods?
I think we're done with the pods. I think there's only one other pod we might be missing, and that's the pod that's, you know, we said Michter's is kind of on their own, but there's another one that kind of really came online that's pretty big and pretty impressive to go see, and that's Bullet. I mean, the Bullet Distilling Company.
Oh, the Shelbyville. Oh,
yeah, Shelbyville.
Yeah, yeah, I throw that in as the one to come back to on the way to Frankfurt.
See, there
you go. Or on the way, either way.
And then you got Jephthah Creed right over there, too.
Yeah, Jephthah Creed, yeah. They don't really open up, though, until, I think, 11. So you could hit Buffalo Trace at 10 and then come
back. You're really planning your itinerary over here.
If you can go have a drink in Jephthah Creed's, like, barrel room where they have those nice couches, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a really nice place to have a drink.
Yeah.
Oh, and another pod I think we got to talk about is the Beeline. We mentioned it a little bit, but the Beeline, you got Boone County, you got New Riff, you got Maysville. What are the other two? But I will tell you that Northern Kentucky to me has like its own kind of like culture.
Newport.
And you can go in and that's right. And you can go in and check out all kinds of restaurants in Cincinnati.
Oh yeah, Cincinnati's got a booming scene in regards to there. You know, there's a lot of places that we didn't hit. I mean, I'm looking over at his basically his pod magazine over here. You got Pogue. You got a lot of different
Pogue
places.
Would be in the beeline.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different places that, like I said, we probably missed and didn't hit. So you got to make sure that you definitely go check out the Kentucky Bourbon Trail to see with everything else that maybe that you want to go check out, and then also check out the craft tour, right? I mean, that's one of the things that we said, that if you want to get an idea of what things look like in regards of seeing something big and versus seeing how it looks like on a smaller scale, you've got to go and check that out as well. And so I think, we've hit all the pods. I think we hit all the
yeah,
pods.
I was going to go down this, since Eric has this like incredible, we were talking before we got on the air about his philosophy about the bubble. And here we are, we're always talking about when's the bubble going to bust and, you know, the tariffs, this, that. And I think Eric's got a really good perspective on what the bourbon bubble looks like. And so, Eric, I'll just give it to you and say, like, give us your thoughts on, are we in a bourbon bubble? Is it about to bust? Yes or no? And why?
Well, from my standpoint, like I've mentioned before, I work in Harrodsburg. I work in Green River, Kentucky. I travel a lot throughout the state, and I try to hit the distilleries on my way back home as much as I can. And so I pay attention to the people that are visiting. And I would say maybe, you know, 1 out of 10 people are from Kentucky. The rest are from out of state as well as out of country. And a lot of times they're from Eastern or Japan. I've ran into people from China. I've heard people say where they're from. And so from my standpoint, I think internationally, the market is so tremendously large because the American culture is sought after by people now that have an influx of money from China, Japan, whatever. And it's globalism that you can see where they are appreciative of what we have and they have a big thirst for it. And so from my standpoint, you know, if China, it's very similar to the wine industry. The wine industry used to be able to, you know, if you're in California, you got the best grapes. France, you got the best grapes. Now it all goes to China because of the population and the massive size of it, as well as other international countries. And so I think I was saying that, you know, basically if 1% of China decides that they like bourbon, that would be 10 million people. And if you look at the population of white oak barrels or white oak trees, sorry, just white oak trees, you have about 183,000 trees. So if you convert that to barrels versus the growth of what they want or the thirst for it, then basically all the bourbon in the world would be gone.
Oh, wow. I didn't really think about that.
Yeah.
Quit building houses, so build everybody.
Build a bigger bunker.
Nobody needs nice new floors. We need to save these trees and start building barrels.
Build a bigger bunker. You know, I think that, you know, it's a huge cultural thing that brings back so many things that are related to history and things like that. And I think that the world's getting a glimpse into it. And I just think it's going to continue to expand. And so I'm happy to be a part of it. And I love to host everybody that wants to come see it.
Absolutely. And it all came full circle. Well, fantastic. So Eric, I want to kind of like wrap this up and give you an opportunity to kind of tell our listeners, if they do want to come and visit Louisville and stay at one of your fine locations, you've got not just one Airbnb, you've got a few, right?
Yeah. We have currently 5 Airbnbs. I can send you in the show notes a link to our Facebook page, Instagram page, as well as our direct booking page. And we host people, you know, on multiple platforms, and all those are, you know, you can find them just searching on Airbnb as well as following some of the sites that we have set up.
There you go. So you can find the link in our show notes. What's it called though?
Ashford Key Properties.
There we go. Make sure you can Google that as well. So Eric, I want to say thank you again for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure to have you. And thank you so much for sharing your whiskey with us, but also being a supportive member of our community too. It's always, always great to have that. And, you know, opening up your home to us to let us record as well. It's pretty awesome.
And I feel pretty safe in here if zombies come.
Especially with how, because we talked about the insulation.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't get through the insulation on the walls.
No. No, not unless they can chew through it like a rat. But
well, I think we might be a little safe.
Yeah, I think we're good. Zombie-proof home, everybody.
Absolutely. So thank you again for everybody that's listening. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure you also follow Fred Minnick. Fred's got a new podcast. Fred, you want to tell everybody about your podcast too?
Yeah, thanks, man. It's the show is called The Fred Minnick Show because I I don't know where it's going to go. Right now, it's music and whiskey. But in case I want to change my mind and do something else with it, it'll be still be me. But I interview musicians. I just booked Lone Star today, the country music band. Got the Flaming Lips, and I got Kiefer Sutherland coming up. Some good fun things. And what I do is I interview musicians and I pair a whiskey to their palate.
You're rubbing too many big shoulders now, Eric. We can't hang out with you much longer.
I don't know about that. I'll tell you this. That's the thing about it is like what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring like these people don't know anything about bourbon. And I spend a good time, learning about them and their musical careers. But I bring bourbon to them and I introduce it to them. And my hope is that I can help bring bourbon to a mass of people that isn't already thinking about it. What ends up happening is like after I do these interviews, they're like, I think I want to start a whiskey. So
you're like, no, not another one.
This
like
they all backfire.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Fred. Thank you for giving that answer. As I said, make sure you follow us. Also, so if you like what you hear, support the show, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. With that, cheers, y'all. Now you have your plans of what you can do when you come to visit. You know, your itinerary and places that you can hit. Make sure you you travel safely and don't try to outdo yourself because there is bourbon burnout when you are on the trail and you try to hit too many things at once. All right. Cheers, y'all. We'll see you next week.